Well, my dad is a vet, and if I was one too, the one thing he always taught me to do is get paid. Cash money. See, jam and eggs is a kind enough thank you, but not for the bookkeeper, not for the banker. The margin's thin on treating large animals, unless it's a purebred or more understandable, a racehorse of some kind. You see, son, city folks pay a high dollar.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in and listening to us today. So, Wisconsinites are feeling the effects of a national veterinarian shortage. So it turns out that a 2021 study found that open veterinarian positions in the United States exceeded the number of qualified candidates by over 2,000 back in 2019, and it's only gotten worse since the COVID-19 pandemic. So here to talk us through more about the shortage and the challenges that has this has created is Dr. Mark Markle, who is the dean of school, the dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor, and immediate past president of the American Association of Veterinary Medical Colleges. Welcome to the show, Dr. Markle.
Thank you for inviting me, Kristen.
So we saw this, and as both Jane and I are both big animal lovers, I have a small Chihuahua mix of some sort named Clifford. And so far, I haven't run into this personally, but that doesn't mean that it's not a problem. So what are some of the challenges right now? And like, how much in Wisconsin are we seeing those numbers that I said as far as how many open positions there are versus how many candidates that there are?
Well, you've already highlighted some of it. You know, nationally right now, there's around 2,000 to 3,000 more open positions in the
Did we lose him?
We might have lost him.
Internet issues, perhaps?
Maybe internet issues. Potentially, we could
try and reconnect.
Try to reconnect and try to maybe call Dr. Markle.
You good?
Now we can hear you. Yes, now we can hear you.
You dropped out for a little bit there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm in a hotel.
Oh.
And so don't know for sure the stability. So over the last 10 years, the increase in demand for veterinary services has been about 10% a year, but we're only producing about 2.7% per year of more veterinarians. So almost by definition, the demand is far exceeding the number of veterinarians being trained. And so that's certainly a challenge. In addition, and I think one of the another major player is there's a substantial shortage of veterinary technicians or veterinary nurses, is what we call them, of somewhere a number of around 50,000 shortage nationwide. So it makes it very challenging to see the number of patients that we want to see, whether it's at the School of Veterinary Medicine or within the state of Wisconsin. I'm also on the Wisconsin Veterinary Medical Association board, and the same issues are impacting both clients, owners of pets, and other animals, as well as veterinarians across Wisconsin.
And so with that, is it just a training issue? Is it just not enough people are going into, going through the post, doctorate school, but going to veterinary school? Is it, it's mostly on like the top of the funnel side, or is it that people are leaving the profession, or what are some of the major causes that's leading to having this shortage?
So the interesting thing is we have 96 slots each year for veteran students. It's a 4-year program. Most people do 4 years of undergraduate before, so 8 years total. We had 2,300 applicants for 96 spots. So it's not that people don't want to go to veterinary school. And in fact, nationwide, across all veterinary schools, the increased number of applicants is up about 25% in the last 3 years. So, but here's the challenge is about 6 years ago, we saw this coming. And so increased our class size by 20%. We used to have 80 per year. Now we have 96. And that is occurring across the country to do that or have done that. But as you might imagine, you enter your freshman year, it takes 4 years for you to graduate. So even if we did all those things today, you wouldn't see that effect for another 4 or 5 or 6 years. In addition is infrastructure requirements. So we increased to 96. And if I had the ability, I'd probably increase even further. But I don't have the office space or the laboratory space or the teaching spaces to accommodate more than 96. So it's really challenging on that front. Nationally,
Mark, you still there? I think we dropped him.
We might have.
Sorry.
It's okay.
So it'll take, even though we've just started four or five new veterinary schools, you know, one in Texas, one in Long Island, one in New Jersey, one in Tennessee, it's going to take 5 or 6 years for those students to get into veterinary school, graduate, start practicing. So it's going to take a while. The other major impact is because there's such a demand for companion animal veterinarians, like people that would take care of your dog, the financial remuneration for those graduates is much higher than in food animal practice, rural practice, horse equine practice. And so a lot of students who might have done some of those other things are going into companion animal practice. There's still a shortage in companion animal practice, but there's a significant shortage in rural communities, in communities that serve, you know, production animals like cattle, sheep, goats, horses, and those kinds of things.
Mark, I can remember so clearly growing up in the 60s, and we grew up in a small town. I grew up in Hartford, and our local veterinarian was a large animal. That was predominantly his thing, and he did dogs and cats kind of as a side thing, and that has almost completely flipped on its head since then, right? As you were saying, there's so much more interest in dealing with small animals, but we still need farriers and we still need veterinarians for all these other farm animals.
Well, the good news on that front is Wisconsin trains more dairy practitioners and large animal practitioners than any other school in the country. But at the same time, there is this pressure, whether it's where you want to raise your family or where or how you're compensated. You're going to get compensated better in an urban area, you know, in companion animal practice. So we do need to continue to focus on that as far as, you know, figuring out a pathway to make sure those veterinarians serve those communities that need them. The other component, you know, that is, you know, remaining to be a challenge is figuring out a pathway to increase that compensation, but also minimize or at least try not to increase their debt load to such an extent that they can't afford to live in those communities. And so there are loan repayment programs that are available for some of our students, and we're really working with the federal government in that case to try to enhance that. Right now, when veterans serve in rural communities in Wisconsin, they can get debt relief up to $75,000, but unlike the human medical profession, they have to pay taxes on that. So we've been trying to get that relieved, and we've been working with Senator Baldwin and others with the Wisconsin delegation to try to, you know, reverse that or at least make that not taxable.
That's really interesting. I mean,
why is that fair?
It's not fair, but as you might imagine, the medical profession led it 30 years ago, and we kind of tagged onto it. And for whatever reason, we didn't get that benefit. We got some of the benefit, but not as much of the benefit as that we wanted. The other piece I just wanted to highlight that is significantly changing the demand, as you highlighted, Jane, in that day, people would work, and when I graduated many years ago, they typically work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. They might work every other weekend on call. They might actually not have an emergency clinic to rely on, so they actually have to provide emergency care all nights. And our students, as they graduate, want to live a more balanced life. So they might want to work a normal 40 or maybe 50-hour work week. So if you think about it, even without that increase in veterinary services, even if that stayed the same, if people are working fewer hours, all of a sudden you're short a significant number of people that want to work a normal life rather than work that 70 or, you know, the James Harriet, you know, all things great, small life.
Yeah. And that's what's really interesting to me that I read when I first was reading about this is that it's the numbers of how many people we actually need could actually be skewed because of how much people used to work in this job, like the hours put in, and that the actual, if people are going to work normal hours, that there's even more people that will end up needing because the hours need to be filled. And so we're talking to Dr. Mark Markle, who is the dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And one thing, what does the, when you graduate and you are now a veterinarian, what does the job landscape look like? How often are people leaving and applying for a job to be employed somewhere as a veterinarian versus starting their own practice? Like, I think about this often with dentists who you are simultaneously a business owner on top of your, you know, skilled profession versus there's just open jobs that need to be filled.
So, you know, I'd say it's changing. So corporate veterinary practice is taking over. It was probably less than 10% of all veterinary practices in the country 10 years ago, and it's over 25% now. There's many major players. In fact, Mars Company is the biggest player. The ones that make chocolate, yes.
I was just going to say, my face was like, the M&M guys?
The M&M guys. And so that's one piece. Most of our students now have 3 to 5 job offers in the winter before they graduate. And in fact, for the first time, we have a significant number of students in their third year, a year and a half before they graduate, that have a number of job offers. So, but the tendency there is you have an offer, you get a benefit package, you get to define those hours we were talking about earlier to whatever you want to sign on to. You can, if you want to work for corporate veterinary medicine, you could say, I'm only working 3 days a week or 4 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever it might be. So I'd say the majority of our students go down that path, because that path you're describing of buying your own practice, setting it up, having employees and all those things, some want to do it. And obviously some do it, but you're working a significantly, you have much greater financial risk and you're working significantly more hours. So I'd say there's fewer of those people doing that today than when I graduated, 35 years ago.
And that's fascinating to think about that. And is that for what we're saying, like the small pet veterinary clinics, more and more of them are owned by a bigger corporation?
Yeah, and you won't even see it typically, although it might say somewhere if you go to your clinic, a VCA office or a Banfield office, but you might not even see that to know that it is owned. One advantage, and I'm not saying either way is good or bad, but one advantage of it is obviously they have scale. They have the ability to purchase all their drugs nationally and cut a deal. They have and that's all the supplies that you might need. They have a standardized way of employment and how you manage workflow as well as medical records. So there are many advantages as far as efficiencies that might be gained through corporate practice. Interestingly, although you're right, it's predominantly companion animal practice, it's not entirely companion animal practice. There certainly are many practices across Wisconsin in the last 10 years that have become corporate that I think some clients wouldn't even know.
That is super interesting. Now I want to go look at our veterinarian and see if they're owned by a bigger company.
Mark, I have one real quick question because we only got about 2 minutes left. What is the worst animal bite you've ever received?
Oh, I've got a good one. So I think highlighted you earlier, I'm an equine surgeon by training. My girlfriend, when I was a resident, I was a resident at University of California, Davis, and my girlfriend had a polo horse called Olive. And so I wanted to prove to her how great I was. So I put my hand in her horse's mouth to palpate his teeth to see whether you had to float them, where you make them even. And Olive chomped on my finger and I didn't want her to know it. But then when blood started running out of his mouth onto the ground, I figured I couldn't hide it anymore. So then I took my finger out. So she thought it was serious.
Was it broken? What was the diagnosis? No. What happened to your finger?
Oh, it was fine.
Okay.
Nothing. He just
thought it was
okay. It was just a munch.
All right. Well, Dr. Mark Markle, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This is super interesting. And I'm sure we'll have some follow-ups as far as where we are maybe 6 months from now.
Sounds great, Kristen. It really is great speaking with you, and everybody have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much. All right. Well, when we come back, a different kind of workforce update that has to do with pay transparency. And maybe, Jane, we're in the wrong business. Maybe we should have been software engineers. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
And then bled to death in front of his owner. Thank you, Doc. What do I... Oh, yeah. Well, that's how it goes if the sugar beet chokes. Just don't get me started on